Assalamu alaikum listeners. This episode features Ahmed Hillo, who is an educator working with different institutions within the community. From what I understand, Ahmed has an interest in the history of the Muslim community in Australia. He is involved in one such initiative which aims to record and describe the activities and efforts of those who built the local Muslim community. As you might be able to recognize from the recording, this is something which he is quite passionate about. He is also quite passionate about a topic within this particular initiative, which aims to educate and inform others about the life of Imam Fahmy, who migrated to Australia in 1951 and passed away in 2016. For those of you who don't know, Imam Fahmy was an active member of the Muslim community. He helped to establish a number of initiatives and organizations which exist to this day. It's probably also worth pointing out that he served as the Grand Mufti of Australia for a few years as well. Being a relative of the late Imam, you can see that this is a topic which my guest Ahmed is quite passionate about. So much so that on one particular occasion in which I met with him, he spoke of this topic with me for at least 1 hour. On this particular occasion, however, he spoke about this particular topic of his for at least half an hour. I recorded it before the actual name change of this particular podcast took place, so please forgive me if I'm still referring to the podcast as Kalamistan. So here's the episode. Hope you enjoy. Assalamu alaikum, good citizens of Kalamistan. With me is a very special guest, Ahmed Hallu from Sirius College. He's a teacher at Sirius College and he's also an engagement officer over there. And Ahmed, would you like to introduce yourself a bit further?
Thank you, Sheikh Furkan, for this opportunity, firstly. I've been at Sirius College since 2003. Started off as a regular teacher. I've held nearly all coordinating positions in the school. And now I hold the position of Community Engagement Officer, in particular looking after the East Meadows campus, which is the main campus of Sirius College.
Alhamdulillah. So I understand you're involved in a number of projects, some of them which are related to the running of the school and some of them which are related to the community itself. Before you begin to talk about the actual project you're here to talk about, can you just give us a rundown of some of your activities, inshallah?
Fair enough. Who am I in more detail? Other than the fact that I'm a teacher at Sirius College, that's my day job. I also am a Taekwondo instructor at OMAC. I've been doing Taekwondo since 1980, born into the sport.
So be careful, everyone, basically.
I'm a humble guy.
Do your students know about that?
When the students at school give me a hard time, I look at them and I say to them, I'll see you in training tonight. I swear I can take care of you. All jokes aside.
Right, of course. We don't want you to get any phone calls from the, you know, teaching authority or anything like that.
No, but yes, many of my Taekwondo students are also my students at Sirius College. I also wear another hat. I'm on the board of ISRA, Islamic Science Research Academy, which is a research and education institute embedded inside Charles Sturt University, where they give Australian qualifications in theology, Islamic theology and Arabic, from bachelor's, master's and PhD.
Okay, so alhamdulillah, we've got a very important person with us, someone who's involved in a number of activities, as we can see. But there's one specific activity that we sort of want to discuss in greater detail. Can you give us a feeling on that?
Certainly. I also found that there's a hole in our community. We're not recording our history. So I and certain family members and close friends formed an organization called AMHA, Australian Muslim Heritage Association, where we want to record the history of the Muslim community in Australia. Otherwise, it will get lost.
So obviously, this is something you're quite passionate about. Why is this, you know, existing in the first place? Why do we need this project in the first place?
There's a good friend of mine. He from Sydney. His name is Dr. Mehmet Ozap. He sits on the ethics board at Sydney University, and whenever a research project, PhD or non-PhD, but any research project has to go through ethics approval. He sat on the board of the ethics for Sydney University when a Jewish young man comes up with his proposal about his PhD. It was about conflict within the Jewish community, how the conflict started, the cause of it, and how the community resolved the conflict,
right.
And how it can be, this conflict resolution can be used as a model for future issues. At the end of the ethics proposal, Dr. Mehmet Ozak said, "Why are you airing your dirty laundry, your community's dirty laundry?" And the response was, "If we don't record our history properly academically, we are damned to repeat the same error over and over again. History will repeat itself.
Mm.
If it's recorded, we will learn what can we do to solve this issue, shows its ugly face again."
So I think that's a pretty good reason, if there ever was one. In relation to the Muslim community, what does this project actually mean for us?
The founders, I call them the juggernauts of our community. Most of them have passed away now.
When you say juggernauts, who do you actually mean?
The likes of Rahmatullah Alayh, Sheikh Fahmi, Ibrahim Dalal,
Rahmatullah
Alayh, Jalal Deen, Rahmatullah Alayh. Many of you will not know who he is. One of them is still alive, Dr. Qadi. He's a very elderly man at the moment. But these are the old founders and juggernauts of the community. They went through hell to lay the foundations, really, for what we take for granted today. And we are trying to do the same thing again, because we're trying to work out how to do it again and again, because it was never recorded. We don't record our history. Throughout Islamic history, we were the masters of recording these things.
Mm.
But we've lost that art, that science today.
Yes, look, it makes a great deal of sense from one perspective, and that is there were so many sacrifices that we don't really understand due to the ease surrounding so many things that we live in, you know, currently in the kind of world that we currently live in. We take so many things for granted and we don't think a lot about these things. And, you know, so many of those who came before us actually had to fight hard for just things which we would consider as trivial, right?
Indeed. And if we don't record these events, not only record and then showcase it and celebrate it, not only within the Muslim community, but to the wider Australian community, racism will grow. And racism is fueled predominantly through ignorance. Many people in Australia, their livelihood is based around Islamic-based traditions and religious services, such as the halal meat industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. It was founded and was formed due to the sacrifices of the likes of Sheikh Fahmi, Ibrahim Dalal, and others who started the industry for exporting halal meat to the Muslim world. And today, millions of people are benefiting from that directly and or indirectly. The wider Australian community needs to know that and be appreciated. The Muslim community is contributing in multiple different facets.
Can you perhaps even describe some of these facets that you're referring to?
Halal meat industry is one of them.
Mm.
Also, the interfaith programs we do, they're small, but they add up here and there. Not many people are aware that Sheikh Fahmi used to host the mosque neighbors for barbecues. He would knock on their doors and invite them for a barbecue.
And what time are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about the 80s. Sheikh Fahmi, I know that he had a good working close relationship with certain members of parliament, in particular the immigration minister and the local MP.
Mm.
In the 70s, during the early stage of the civil war in Lebanon, metaphorically speaking here, had the rubber stamp to stamp anyone to come into Australia as permanent residents.
Mm.
Just bring them in.
Right.
So this is all, and all that is due because they wanted the factories filled with workers.
Right.
So we created employment opportunities as well. I heard once the former opposition leader, Bill Shorten, saying the Lebanese community, which is predominantly Muslim, is one of the biggest self-employed entrepreneur communities in the country.
Right. One of the things I really respect about you when you talk about this particular project of yours is the passion. There was one particular instance where you kept me for at least 1 hour just to talk about what you uncovered through your analysis and through your research and through your interviews. And I think that's something the listeners really need to appreciate.
Yes, look, I do have to also declare this. Sheikh Fahmi is my great uncle, rahmatullah alayhi. Sheikh Fahmi Imam would be my grandmother's brother. My father and aunties and uncle on my paternal side were orphaned. So Sheikh Fahmi played a big role in raising my father and my aunties and uncle. So in my eyes, he's more of a grandfather than a great uncle. One of the things...
So it has a very personal connection,
yes,
to you. Basically.
Indeed, very personal connection. When Sheikh Fahmi first fell ill, it was I who took him to the hospital where he got diagnosed with his illness. And I was personally very close to him as well, as his great nephew. I'll give you some anecdotes, because I can't tell you the whole thing, because we're in the process of formulating a book which will be launched, inshallah, in March, The Life of Sheikh Fahmy, a biography launched through the Islamic Museum of Australia. It's a research project we commissioned ISRA to do under the watchful eye of Dr. Suleiman Sertkaya, who is a theologian. And ISRA realized that they are theologians, not historians, so they also commissioned a historian from Sydney University to co-author this book as well. So some anecdotes, because I don't want to give the spoiler for the book away. Sheikh Fahmy came to Australia in 1951 with intention to study engineering. He, cut a long story short, he got married, had children, studying and raising a family. Money didn't quite work out, so he started working. He is an electrician. Sheikh Fahmy is actually an A-grade electrician. His father-in-law was a plumber. It was his father-in-law and Sheikh Fahmy together who built the 1956 Olympic Melbourne Cauldron. So wow. The former Mufti of Australia was the sparky behind the cauldron, and his father-in-law was the plumber.
Wow, that's interesting.
So these little anecdotal stories are fantastic.
One of the things I sort of recognize with regards to this project is that it's not just a biography of Imam Fahmy, but it's also something which looks into the history of Muslims in Australia during that time he first arrived and settled in and so forth.
Yes, indeed. Sheikh Fahmy was the most knowledgeable person at the time, so everyone will rely back on him. He would go around in the 1960s where seatbelts were very laxed, those laws. He would, in his old Holden, it was, station wagon, his work vehicle, shove around 10, 12 kids in the back seat and take them to the mosque so they can learn to read Quran, understand the religion. One of them was, if I'm not mistaken from memory, was Hastalal, the current director of SBS. Chairman, I believe he is at the moment. So a lot
I'm going to have to ask him about that once I get him on.
So many stories like that. He would go around, and Sheikh Fahmy would go all around the country trying to raise $20 here, $10 there to build what we take for granted today, Preston Mosque.
Right.
And other institutions which were established, such as Board of Imams, AFIC.
I mean, right now we take a lot of these institutions for granted, but there was a time when, you know, we were struggling to get them off the ground.
We were struggling to find somewhere halal to eat.
Right.
That was how...
Yeah, nowadays there's an app for that.
Exactly. So it's... This history needs to be recorded and celebrated. And people out there have their own anecdotal stories about these. And it'd be great if we can collect it to one place, which is something Amha is working on, to build a website where people can plug in their anecdotal stories, video footage, photos of history of the local Muslim community.
There seems to be a lot of those. It comes to mind the story of Ibrahim Dallal. You know, there's a book out, you know, with Ahmed Lonmi. It basically talks about a situation where Ibrahim brought yogurt to work for the very first time, and all of the people that worked with him were amazed at this strange thing that he actually brought. You know, they were thinking that it was, you know, off cheese, it was expired cheese, and he was purposely eating it to make himself sick or something like that. People had never seen yogurt before, basically. That's the type of world that we're talking about, a very different world to our own.
Yes, cultural.
Those types of anecdotes which make
the
project, basically.
And later on, Ibrahim Dalal then would go around and selling those tubs of yogurt to raise money for the Muslims' projects in the community.
Yeah. You know, for our listeners, Ahmed showed me some photographs from the project itself that were, I guess, taken during the 1930s or 40s. Some of them featured Imam Fahmy, you know, when he was a younger man. And it seems like, you know, a different world altogether, like an alternate universe, like another planet, basically. You know, the way that people looked and, you know, dressed and, you know, had their hair styled and so forth. The same can be said of pictures of Imam Fahmy when he was living here in the 60s, very different to how some of us may remember him, you know, a very different person altogether from what I, you know, could observe.
My favorite photo, which I was showing you, is when he was around 10 years old.
So our listeners can't actually see it.
Right? Yes. So when he was 10 years old, the family photo, Sheikh Fahmy is the youngest of all his siblings.
Mm.
So here he is, 10 years old, next to his mother, sisters, brother, father, and it was a beautiful family photo. And looking at that photo, that little boy there grows up and becomes a juggernaut halfway across the world in Australia, shaping the lives of untold number of people well after his death. So these images have power. Listeners cannot see it, unfortunately, but they speak billions of words.
It's true. Even when we last spoke about this particular project, you spoke about promise that Imam Fahmy once made, you know, when he was getting a license for...
Yes.
You remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. The ones who missed out on the opportunity of meeting him, he was actually very, very witty. Very smart, very witty man. And he would meet up with the ministers regularly. This is back, we're talking about in the 70s here, if not 60s as well, trying to build dialogue. At the same time, the Muslim community is growing. A Muslim couple want to get married. They will come to the imam. They'll do the Islamic marriage celibacy, known as nikah. And then he'll either take the couple to a church for legal marriage under Australian law, or bring the priest to the mosque, or bring the priest to the venue of the wedding. After a while, it's like, enough is enough. Why can't us Muslims be legal marriage celebrants? He speaks to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General says, you Muslims believe in polygamy. You guys practice polygamy. Under Australian law, polygamy is not allowed. Shafin was very witty, very quick on his feet, and he said, the first marriage is legal under Islamic law and Australian law. The second marriage, we do it under Islamic law, but in the eyes of the law, it's a mistress. And the Attorney General smiles and says, many Aussies have a wife and a mistress. Deal. But then the Attorney General said to him, one condition, that you personally never marry a man off to more than one wife, even Islamically. He agreed on that deal. And I know people who went to the Sheikh and said, my wife has allowed me for a second wife. Can you please marry me off? And Sheikh will say, no, I will keep my word to the former Attorney General, even though that man had passed away. And he was a non-Muslim, obviously, but a promise was a promise he kept.
That's a fascinating story. As I recall, even the way that he initially got married, as I understand it, to a woman that had not converted as well?
No, it wasn't like that. His wife, Ramzi, rahmatullah alayha, married Sheikh Fahmy and she was Muslim. He first met her, she was not Muslim, but she was interested in Islam, looking for faith, and that's how they met. And then she went off there. She's English of English origin, and she went to London. In London, she became Muslim, completely away from Sheikh Fahmy, away from Australia. She became Muslim in the UK, in London, and came back after a while, a long period of time back. She came back to Australia, she met up with Sheikh Fahmy again, and then Sheikh Fahmy proposed to her. So she became Muslim of her own bat. So yes, and she spoke, not many people realize, her Arabic wasn't bad at all. She was quite good in Arabic. And she was a very homey person. She didn't interact with the community a lot. But in the early days, when the community was very small, when the Preston Mosque was still an old wooden house, she used to run the canteen for the kids on Saturday and Sunday school for them to have a snack to eat. That was her contribution to the community.
Right. So what are other interesting things that you've uncovered through this project that basically surprised you?
Oh, the emotional, heartwarming stories of individuals, how the Sheikh changed their lives. And some of them were very, very funny. Everyone referred to the Sheikh as our father. He was a community's father. So when you're stuck, who do you call? Your father. His son was telling me this story. His son, Ahmed Imam. Back in the old days, there was no mobile phones. Sheikh Fahmy gave his personal home phone out to everyone. So his home phone would ring off the hook. Not metaphorically, but literally speaking. A phone call rings. Family from Lebanon escaping the war. Sheikh, we're stuck outside. We've locked ourselves outside the house. What do we do? Even to that level. Foreign country. They don't know who. They haven't got no English language. The only person they know is from the mosque. And who do they best trust? The Sheikh himself. What do we do? So he says, I'm coming. He picked up his son, Ahmad, you come with me. They go to the house. As an electrician, he's a tradesman, he has some tools, opened the window slightly, picked up his son, put him through the window to open the door from the inside. So these stories, like these anecdotal stories, when people refer to him, he's our father, he's the community's father. When people were stuck, who do you call? The father.
Mm.
And that is who, and they're the stories. I still remember my uncle in the late 60s and early 70s, every week, or it was every month, don't quote me on this, but they would have dinner at their uncle's house, Chef Fehmi. So all the cousins would go visit, all the nephews will visit, and nieces will go and visit their uncle. When they walk in, the last person to walk in would unplug the phone from the socket. I asked him why. If we didn't do that, he would not sit down with us. The phone would not stop. Sheikh need help. Sheikh need this. Sheikh. So he can have a meal, and so we can see our own uncle, would unplug the phone, and as a way out, on the way out, we'll plug it back in, and he didn't realize.
A lot of people don't realize the sacrifices made by some of these individuals who put themselves, you know, out in front of everyone.
A lot of these people, I'm sure you can relate as an imam as well, you provide these services to the community, to the people, family, friends, strangers, and unfortunately, you responded with insults, responded with lack of appreciation. His nephew, my father's brother, said, yeah, Sheikh, why are you doing this? You're doing all this work, all this energy and effort. You could have been a millionaire, but you're doing it in return. You're not even getting a thank you. You're getting insults in return. His response was, if I did it for the people, I would have quit a long time ago. But I'm doing it for the sake of Allah, and not one piece of my effort has gone astray. That was 1969.
So in relation to this whole project, has there been something that you've wanted to know more information about as you've been researching things that you're still sort of trying to understand?
How did he do it? How did they do it? Balance family life, community life, and a professional life. I'm struggling. I think the average person is struggling with just a personal family life plus a work life. But their community life was busier than their professional life, which was needed to provide a roof over the family's head.
Mm.
How did they do it? I keep thinking it's the barakah of Allah. I've got no other answer for it.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that. What were some of the activities that he was involved in throughout his life consistently? Can you remember any?
He was, obviously, Preston Mosque, the founder. He also helped found Lakemba Mosque in Sydney. So borders did not stop him. Brisbane Mosque, King Khalid, the school. Obviously, he was not alone. He was a part of a team. ICV, AFIC, these amazing institutions till today stand strong. Halal meats industry. He was speaking to the Australian Indian Culture Society. Even they recognize that Sheikh Fehmi is a father of Muslim dialogue in this country. And he was doing it ad hoc with the community, and then with officials like ministers, governors, and so on and so
right,
forth.
Right.
He's ongoing dealing with people's personal problems, day in, day out, trying to solve their problems.
What kind of problems are we talking
Marriage,
about?
Divorce, children going astray, drugs, unfortunately, mental health issues, domestic violence. Nothing has changed in the community, in the Australian community in general. So back then it was less because the community was smaller, but because the ratio was less. But he was mostly on his own on that, as well as running a weekend school for the kids in the community to learn their religion.
Okay. So when is this project coming out? When can we read?
March.
March.
The book is
far away.
No, which the book will be launched in March at the Islamic Museum. We're also looking at...
Can you repeat the name for us once again of the book?
The book, we haven't given a title yet.
No.
That's another surprise. It is the biography of the late Sheikh Fehmi Naji al-Imam.
And how will you be presenting this information alongside the book? I remember...
There will be an exhibition in the museum as well as part of the launch.
Mm. You were thinking about animations at one stage.
Yes. The reality is budget is a budget, money is money.
Mm.
We would love to do a documentary as well. And we sat down with a production company. Many of you... And maybe you listeners might know of George Denikian, the former Channel 10 and SBS news reporter, anchorman. he was passionately supporting this project, and he was willing to contribute.
What was his reason, by the way?
He's a strong believer in interfaith programs as well. And he believes that if we do it right and spend the right money, and we're talking in the order of $250,000 here, to a documentary on the life of Sheikh Fahmy, it will be and can be aired, because it has to be cinema quality, on the free-to-air TV, such as SBS or ABC. And he said there is a market out there. The likes of SBS, which is a multicultural channel, will pick it up. It just has to be done right. And that involves money. Just doing the research of the life of Sheikh Fahmy, paying the academics, cost us tens of thousands of dollars. Nothing is cheap. It's just the reality of life.
Mm-hmm. So what might we expect in the exhibition that's going to be coming very soon?
Obviously, other than the book, we'll have some of his documentations, his qualifications, photos from his early days, his latter days, his some...
These are the photos that I was referring to much earlier.
Yes, and a lot more.
Yeah.
Things you have not seen, and things I haven't seen as well, which are still with the researchers. So anecdotal paragraphs of different people, of their stories, such as the ministers, foreign ministers, and so on and so forth. Just to give another better interfaith dialogue he was involved in. At one stage, Sheikh Fahmy ran a program for the Royal Children's Hospital, where the Muslim community, he raised money from the Muslim community for the Royal Children's Hospital, an auxiliary fund.
Mm.
The Muslim community, under the Sheikh Fahmy's leadership, became the second largest auxiliary fund donors to the hospital. Why aren't we celebrating that? Why isn't that broadcasted? So the wider Australian community should know, oh, these Muslims are actually really caring about the community. But we're not advertising. It took a leadership of a man to do it, Sheikh Fahmy. He put the team together to do it. Why isn't it celebrated? These are things I would like to tell you about. But the funniest story just came to my mind, I forgot to tell you earlier on. No one knew his name was actually Muhammad.
Oh, wow. What was it?
Not even his own kids. One day, they get a letter in the mail. Muhammad Fahmy Imam. And for that, yes, that's my actual first name. That's my legal name. I never use it, but his own kids were surprised that his name was also Muhammad.
Yeah, and it happens to be the most common name in the world as well.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting part of it. With regards to the actual launch, is there anything else that our listeners might need to know?
Keep listening to this channel, so that way we can advertise the date of the exact launch.
It's not a channel, it's a podcast.
You know what I mean. Podcast.
Right.
So we can keep listening to Sheikh Furqan's podcast, so you can know the exact launch date.
Mm.
It will be at the Islamic Museum. I'd like to thank the likes of the Islamic Museum for their sponsorship of the project as well. As well as Preston Mosque, Islam Society of Victoria, who also funded part of this project as well.
So there's a lot of people to thank, and I'd also like to thank you for your time here, coming here.
Very, very welcome.
So till next time, my dear brothers and sisters and listeners,